They say there are two things you can guarantee in life, death and taxes, but I think I've got another one to add to the list. A bulging mail sack whenever Reading lose. Yes, it is the Tireless Den podcast, episode number 138. And while a 1-1 draw with Hull and a 2-0 home defeat to Swansea in the Carabao Cup may not sound particularly thrilling, Yapstam's post-match comments have caused a storm amongst Reading fans. We will get to the bottom of that. We'll tell you what he's had to say and give our thoughts on that all within the next hour. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetireless.com. Thank you very much indeed for hitting that download button once again and supporting the show. Before I introduce my co-host today, just a very quick thank you to everyone who continues to support not only thetireless.com, but who go that extra mile to support us via Patreon. Now, we love doing this for you. We love talking about Reading. It's our passion. It's our club. But the amount of effort and hours that go into producing these podcasts and the website and everything else, sometimes we need that little bit of a financial kick. So everyone who'd help support us through patreon.com is an extra special. You are in that elite circle. And Royce Murphy and Jason have joined that elite circle this week. So thank you very much, guys, for pledging your support. It doesn't matter what you pledge, whether it's a pound, a five or a tenner, whatever, it makes a massive difference. So head over to patreon.com/thetireless.end, patreon.com/thetireless.end. Treat it like that electronic tip jar. Give a couple of quid and it makes us very happy. Anyway, also making me happy is the fact that the man I've got opposite me, you know, we thought we'll keep with some consistency. You know, what worked ain't broke, don't fix it. Or it ain't broke, so we don't need to fix it. One of the two. I'll get there in the end. Clearly, I'm very broken at this stage of the podcast recording. We're only 3 minutes in, but Mr. Alan West will hopefully pick me up. Westy, hello.
Hello, Wim. I've been looking forward to this afternoon, I must admit, since Saturday's game of football, shall we say.
Yes, I think we can describe it as football. There was a football out there.
The feet were touching balls, definitely.
Yes, absolutely. And as mentioned, lots of you have been having your say. Yapstam creating that frenzy on social media with his post-match comments to BBC Radio Berkshire and followed up in the local press as well. We've got all of that to get to. I said two games as well, and also two more games to preview as we face Millwall and Norwich in the next few days. So let's delve into it. Let's get into that recap.
View from the Tireless Den. Recapping this week's championship action.
Wesley, let's get the smaller issue out of the way, first of all. Before we faced Hull on Saturday, we had Swansea in the Carabao Cup third round. Bit of a change team from Yapstam. 2-0 defeat against a very strong Swansea side. Is there anything at all that you're taking away from this game, or is it buried completely away now?
No, it's buried completely away. The only thing I would say, if you remember last week's show, there was me giving Pelle Clement praise after praise.
Yes.
And then I noticed on pretty much every website I read that he was getting absolute pelters. So I thought, maybe I'll back to losing horse there. But no, I still stick by the fact that he's not a striker. We see today, this week, anyhow, Saturday, that McCleary's clearly not a striker. So why don't we play a striker up front?
Yeah, the one thing I took away from this is that there is no hidden gems in the cupboard at the moment. There was nobody who put in the sort of performance that made me think he needs to be playing week in, week out. And unfortunately, the bluntness in attack, I think we managed 4 shots on goal, 1 on target before it was 2-0. And that bluntness carried over into Saturday's league game. Now, it was a lineup that we had seen finish, or at least start the second half at Brentford. One change, Roy Behrens came in, but the man he replaced was what caused a lot of eyebrows. It was John Duddy Bodvarsson, Westy. Reading starting a home game without a recognised striker.
Yeah, and we already knew there wasn't a lot of goals in the side. I mean, it was interesting in the fact that when he came on, he made such a massive difference. Because all of a sudden you had a player up front who was like Kermigan, played, he held the ball, he won headers. We went a little bit more direct. We played it up quicker to him rather than the ploddy nonsense that had gone on before. His influence in that team when he came on was massive, and it made a mockery of the fact that he was sat on the bench. In hindsight, okay, he's missed a couple of chances recently, but at least he was getting in position to get chances where no one else seems to be doing that.
Yeah, and you know, so we had that front rotating three of Gareth McCleary, Roy Behrens, and Son Eluko. And look, each of them had little tiny moments. Eluko more so than the other two.
I thought McCleary was poor on the day. I thought he had a dreadful game. Even when he went playing more of a winger. I still thought he was awful. I thought it was the worst game I've seen him play for a long, long time.
He had a little 10-minute spell at the start of the second half when he was linking up again with Gunter, and I thought, okay, this is more like the McCleary I want to see. But otherwise, you're right. Very ineffectual.
He was very ineffective. And up front, he may as well not have bothered. I think the only chance he had was a free header where he didn't even have to jump, and he sort of tamely put it straight to that goalkeeper.
He was never going to get much for Sifno against someone like Michael Dawson, who's been there and done it. He's got too much experience to be done by someone, a novice striker like McCleary. Sorry, Gareth.
Yeah, and not only that, I think, again, if you're going to play those three up front, then they are quick players. You need to be given the ball so they can run onto it or they can get behind defenders. But again, it seemed far too much like players were coming to feet all the time and they just had no idea. I mean, Edwards, for example, I don't know if you watch, I sat and watched Edwards because I do like to watch a midfielder.
Yeah.
And he was obviously playing a more forward row role in that midfield. Every time he got the ball through the first half and the second, he didn't once look behind him to see if he could turn around and make some happen going forward. He got it to feet and he passed it backwards. And that went on and on and on. I kept pointing out, I said, yeah, watch this. As soon as he got the ball to feet, he didn't look once and there was acres behind him on occasions and he went straight back to either McShane or Moore. And I thought, well, you're not going to get anywhere. And I think this game, more than anyone, I mean, one of my favourites last year was Williams. Not because he's the best player in the world, but because when he got the ball, he used to drive at teams and try to make things happen. And the only time that happened was when Van der Berg went in midfield and he'd done it once.
Yeah.
And he was absolutely blowing out of his backside at the end of it. But he did make something happen. You know what I mean? He did try. It seems like they're not taking any risks.
Yeah.
My mate said outside, he said, the thing is with his side is he's got a good bunch of players. Most of them he's bought now, so there's no excuses. And he's, in many ways, the football is holding them back. Because once they started moving the ball a bit quicker in the second half, once Bodvarsson come on and he played more the Kermigan role, they looked like they was going to be a threat going forward. But until then, it was that first half was awful. I mean, that was real bad.
What amazes me is the disconnect between what Jaap Stam is saying about what he's talking about on the training ground, what they're working on, and what happens on the pitch. Because he said in the post-match comments, and not the ones that riled everyone up, before that he was saying, we need to be quicker, we need to do this, we need to do that. And I'm sort of thinking, so why aren't they doing it then? Are they not good enough? Are you not getting the message across?
It happened once in the first half. When there was 1-0 down, Reading, they had one good bit of football down the left-hand side.
Yes.
When they had about three touches, they moved it really quickly, and Aluka should have scored.
Horrible miss, really.
He should have scored. And that was the only time in the first half where Reading even looked even remotely like I was going to score a goal.
There was a tweet from the Hull fan saying, good work, secret agent Aluko.
Yeah, that was, maybe we know he's not too good on his right foot now, but that was, he should have scored that. And if he had scored that, then you might have had a different game. But we just, I think two home games on the trot now in the league, it's been exactly the same game where they've just sat in, watched us do nothing. And then once they've had an opportunity to score, they have. And to be fair, they should have been out of sight before we ever got back in that game.
Mm. And it's not just us thinking this. I mean, we'll come on to all of your responses, and there are numerous of them. I joked at the top of the show about the bulging mail sack. Lots of you have taken time to, you know, write really good, considered responses, and we really appreciate that. This is your show, so we do our very best to read out as much as we can. And a lot of people are saying already what we've been saying. This isn't just something that myself and you, or, you know, some people say, oh, the Tarlest End have got this agenda, that agenda. It's not. This is coming from the fan base.
Yeah.
We report and we say what we see. Then we hand it over to people to voice their opinions, and we're not getting counter opinions here.
No, I've been to work before I come and do this, and everyone who goes to watch Reading, they're all season to goals, they've all been going for years, has said exactly the same thing. It was too slow, it's too ploddy, no one takes any risks, and we don't look like scoring.
Nobody is defending this style of football, which is the amazing thing about it. At least even in the Rodgers era, you had some people saying, oh, I actually quite enjoy this. I'm not meeting any Reading fans.
Nah.
I'm not meeting anybody anecdotally. I'm not getting tweets saying, you know what, I really enjoyed today's game. It's a good tactical battle, or I love the technical skill. Now, the one defence that has been levelled, and I made this very defence a few weeks ago, just after the transfer window shut, is I said, I looked at the players that Yap was recruiting and I thought, I can see what he's trying to do here and how he's going to try and evolve the style from here. That hasn't happened so far. Mo Barrow's injury probably playing a big part in that. John Swift being injured hasn't helped as well, but that still leaves 85% of a team that I thought would be exciting, and it's not.
I think, again, it pointed out how much of a miss that Kermigan is in that side, because last year, we said every week how much work he was getting through, how much great defending he was doing, and how he's an outlet because you can hit him. And I think, like I said earlier, the only time that changed was when Bob Varson come on and done something similar.
Even with Kermigan in the side, how many times did we record on this show with yourself and with others, and we said, well, Reading didn't actually create that much. They had two or three good chances. They took one of them, and then the defence worked really well.
Well, that's what's happening. I mean, obviously, Kermigan scored a lot of goals last year, but because there's no one putting a ball in it now, it's showing the weaknesses in the football and how, let's face it, boring it is. It is boring to
watch.
That
margin for error they had last year where everything seemed to be going, falling on the nice side of the margin for error, is gone. There is a good reason why most other pundits, you know, Get Reading were taking a weekly pop at all these pundits saying, oh, Reading are going to fall off, Reading are going to fall off. The reason they took it is because they were watching Reading games and they were coming away saying, how have Reading got to win that game? Yeah. Statisticians looked at the stats from our games, the expected shots, the probability and all of that. There's a good reason these models exist. They're not perfect. No stat is perfect. But they're based on football history.
Yeah.
We were defying all of that. And now suddenly, when things aren't going our way, we're not magically turning it around. You know, suddenly these questions are being asked. Now, maybe we should have been asked these questions earlier. Or again, maybe it's just a case of, well, this luck is going to flip back round.
Yeah, maybe it will. Like I said, but if you're not creating a lot of chances, you're not going to score a lot of goals. It's not rocket science, is it? And I think it's been a spillover from the playoff final. Because let's face it, that playoff final was the worst playoff final in history. And Reading went through the game looking like they didn't try and win the game. They just tried not to lose. And even when it came out, I suppose you're going to move on to it. But substitutions on Saturday. I mean, I was flummoxed when he put Alori on the pitch. I thought, What are you thinking?
Yeah, and that's what set the fans off. Before we come on to that, though, the Hull's opener, again, an opposition player having a clear run on goal from 8 yards. We just saw it at Griffin Park, and it's happened again.
It's happened over and over already this year, hasn't it? I think we got away with it in some of the games. I think, was it Villa at home when they hadn't touched the ball the whole first half, and they had the best chance of the game where it got slid through, and you think, where's everyone gone?
Yeah, inside the first couple of minutes.
And luckily the goalkeeper saved it. And like I said, Hull should have been out of sight. That goal, to be fair, Hull didn't look a great side. I mean, they had some tricky
functional
players.
Functional.
I mean, you see they've come out of the Premier League, but they weren't miles in front of Reading. I thought they were very similar sort of teams. But that goal, it was stoppable, wasn't it? It wasn't a worldie. He sort of just slid in and...
Where's the blame for you on that? Because a lot of people pointed to Chris Gunter, and I think that is why he got quite a few jeers when he got subbed off later on. A lot of people pinning it on Gunter. Do you think he deserves most of the blame? For me, it's the midfield.
Yeah, again, I thought it was too easy to get at the defenders, and Gunter was playing right back, and to be fair, he had tucked in quite a long way.
Well, it's because Paul McShane had to step out to make the tackle.
Yeah.
Kelly had missed his interception. I have no idea where Dave Edwards or Joe Vandenberg were.
No.
Because I can't remember in my head, and looking back on the replay, you can't see them.
No, if you've got a midfield free, you should have a screen, shouldn't you? And it didn't seem to happen. I think, actually, if you watched Edwards again, especially at the back end of the game, that when he lost the ball, he was too busy chucking his arms up in the air and putting his hands in his face rather than turning around and getting after players. And I don't like seeing that. I've never liked seeing that. If you're a midfielder, you're supposed to defend as well. And if you lose it, get yourself back in there.
Yeah, so McShane has to step out. He misses his tackle. To be fair, it is a lovely ball from Seb Larson.
Yeah, it's a good finish as
and
well.
And a predatory run as well from Fraser Campbell. That is the difference that a striker makes. A striker makes that run. Sorry, Gareth McCleary or Roy Behrens aren't going to make those runs.
No, they're back to goal most of the time.
That's why Brian McDermott used to love bringing on Adam Lafondra.
Yeah.
Because with a tired defence, when those holes started appearing, Alfie just knew those little runs to make.
Mm-hmm.
Same with people like Jimmy Quinn. They were never blessed with great pace.
No.
They just found themselves in the right position. Trevor Morley, Dave Kitson. Don't have that at the moment. But look, I don't want this to be a complete negative. I thought generally the defending was good. I thought, you know, they did their jobs. Hull had those couple of good chances when we started pushing up later on. But overall, Reading looked comfortable.
Keeper made two good saves, I thought, as well. One from the free kick that changed direction. Yeah. He done well. And there was the other one where they gave us a goal kick, but it was a corner where they should have scored just before we did. But even that, the guy's run from mile out, and he's gone past about three or four players. He's got a shot off, and you thought, how's he managed to get past all so many players there? And like I say, the goalkeeper made a great save on that one. And then we've gone down the other end.
What did you make of Sonny Aluko's performance? Because Johnny, I was speaking to him after the game, and he thought Aluko was probably our man of the match.
Really? I didn't think he'd done
it. It was okay to the side of good. I gave him a 6 out of 10, which in our Tarlestown ratings is good to solid.
There was no one I thought come out of that game with a 7, apart from probably Bob Varson when he came on.
Yeah, that's exactly how I rated.
Because he changed the game so much. But other than that, I think you had a lot of 6s in that game. And I thought Luku, yeah, he had a lot of the ball. He had a little bit of... He looked like he was trying to get
past. If something was going to happen, it looked like it was going to come from...
Yeah, but other than that, I mean, missing a chance like he did, I think you've automatically got rid of a 7.
Yeah, very much so. So, you know, you mentioned the substitutes. We get to just after half-time and Stam shows his absolute ruthless streak. Tyler Blackett fluffs up down the left-hand side in an attacking area. He calls straight to get Jordan Obita in from warming up and stripped off, and Obita was on with 5 minutes.
Don't you think, though, because I do, that if Reading are losing a game or they're chasing a game, they would be my first two substitutions, Gunter and Blackett, because they offer you very little going forward.
I'm not so sure about Gunter. I agree about Blackett.
I think if you're going to go to a... Especially if you're going to go to a back three... There's no, I don't think there's any need to have Gunter on the pitch.
Because, well, Gunter does that role well for Wales, though. He plays that right wing back role and creates a few opportunities.
But he really, he can't cross. His crossing is awful. I think he's bad in attacking positions.
I just think, I don't know whether I would, I don't want to say the word waste a substitution, but I think if I was making a double sub, I don't think Gunter would be.
No, but you could always use Gunter as your other centre back, couldn't you? You could always move him infield a little bit and play him as a right centre back, because he's played that before, and then puts either a Behrens or Popper on the wing, on the right wing back, do you know what I mean? Because I think they give you more going forward, and it wouldn't be so much of a defensive hit to you.
Well, Obita certainly gave us more going forward. I thought immediately with him coming on, he was putting crosses in the box. He actually gave the whole defence something to do.
If you're playing wing back, there's only one choice, as far as I'm concerned, because Blackett is, I don't think he is that.
And unfortunately, it looks like we're going to be robbed of that choice for a while. Obita pulling up in the very last minute has a bit of a nasty collision with the advertising hoardings. Looks like he's done some serious damage to his knee. Stretch it off. Looks like we're going to be without him for a while, Westy. So Tyler Blackett's just going to have to improve, or they're going to have to find somebody else.
Yeah, I just don't think it's his position. I don't think it's his fault.
His make weight.
He's a left back, well, left centre midfielder, really, a central defender. So I don't think even that he's a great left back. He does tend to get, he switches off too much for me.
Yeah, so that's the first substitution. We're looking a bit better. And then comes the sub that really roused the crowd. Liam Kelly, who, let's face it, Kelly himself hadn't had a brilliant game.
No.
He had a bright first 10 minutes and then faded. He comes off, so you're thinking, oh, okay, you're going to bring on John Swift, you're going to bring on Bodvarsson. No. £10 for anyone who guessed this sub coming. He comes off, Thiago Alori is the man on, and we go to 5 at the back. This prompted quite a few boos. I've not heard for a substitution since... Do you remember when when Leisurewood was getting taken off?
Yes, yeah. I do. But I don't know how Stam's not surprised. I really don't get how he thinks that was not going to get some sort of reaction from the home crowd. Now, I know we're going to move on to it, so I don't go too much into it, but... You can't tell me a team who's not had a shot on goal the whole match and don't look like scoring, and as a striker that you've signed, sat on the bench, the only one who was in this match day squad, who's a recognised centre forward, right? And you're losing the match and you haven't had a shot and you're bringing on a centre back. Now, initially, when you see it happen, I mean, I don't boo. If I'm going to boo, I'll boo at the end. Right? I didn't boo. I'd rather just walk out in silence.
Yeah.
But... when a centre-back stands up and you're taking off... Don't forget, this is our top scorer you took off the pitch.
Yes.
Right? The top scorer. You took him off. I didn't think he played well. If he got substituted, fine. I didn't have a problem with that. It was the fact you put a centre-back on there, fine. What he actually did was put Vandenberg in midfield. And like I say, he did try and drive us forward. So in Yap's defence, it probably was better than what we had already. But you've got a striker you've signed, you've left him on the bench. And that, to me, was always going to get a reaction from the crowd, rightly or wrongly.
Yeah, and you know, as you mentioned, it did open us up a little bit. But look, I'm not going to sit here and say we really looked likely to score. This was very much heading for a 1-0 home defeat until I think it was a bit of a hopeful punt forward. Ends up with Aluko, who plays a really nice little ball over the top to play in the bod. Controls it really well and finishes. A really, really good goal.
It was a great goal. And like I said, it wasn't a simple tap-in. This was a great goal.
It got a lot to do.
It got them out of jail. Because they wasn't winning that game. You know what I mean? They looked like it was over because they didn't create enough to scare Hull. And fair play to him. Because like I said, I thought he was excellent when he came on. I thought he'd done everything right.
Yeah, and that had come just minutes after Hull had wasted two really good chances. They had two fantastic free kicks as well. They hit the post.
Dish him out of sight by then.
Yeah. And Reading managed to sneak a point. So that takes us to 9 points from 8 games.
Ironically, though, Reading could have won that game at the end.
If Hull
wouldn't have scuffed that shot at the end, they'd have won that game. Yeah. And it would have papered over the cracks, I think, because... they didn't deserve to.
No, absolutely. 18th in the table, that leaves us 9 points from eight. We're 6 points off the playoff places. We're 11 points now from the top two. For a bit of a comparison, we had 8 points from eight games in the year we won the league. But I think I was joking with Johnny in the pre-match video. I think that'll be the crutch used for any sort of real optimist now from this point. But yeah. It's, you know, I think Brendan Rodgers had 6 points after eight games in his season that he ended up getting sacked. So I wrote in my match report that I thought this was sacking form. Now, I've had a little bit of bite back from that. Do you think 9 points from eight for a club of where you think Reading are, do you think that is sacking form? When you, I'm not saying that Yap Sam should be sacked. I'm saying this form is sacking form.
This form is sacking form, definitely. Especially when you spent the amount of money they have. They spent a lot of money. That no other Reading manager in history has had that amount of money to spend on players. So you're already putting yourself under pressure. Now, again, I'm not saying sack the manager, of course not. He's done an excellent job so far. But they need to learn from their mistakes. And we keep hearing when we take some hammerings away from home, oh, we're going to learn from these mistakes. Well, you need to start learning from these mistakes because you are moving that ball too slowly and you haven't got enough players that are being dynamic. And like my mate said, outside of the ground, he, with this style of football, is holding them players back because they're better than what they're showing. Definitely.
Yeah, we saw it kind of under, do you remember under Nigel Adkins, when the first season we were back down from the Premier League, we were playing sort of before Christmas. He was trying to get people passing the ball. And then I think the story goes, they had a player meeting around December and then they started playing again. Yeah. You know, they smashed Blackpool. They smashed, there was another team, Bolton. We smacked seven past because Adkins just said, you know what, right, okay, we'll do it your way. I don't think that's going to happen because I think Stam has brought in players that like playing this way.
Yeah, but he's also brought in players that have got pace and you need to utilise that rather than them with their back to goal, passing it back to midfield and then going back to the defence.
There were those tantalising moments in the second half where we're just getting the ball out wide and we had overlapping players and just thought, yes,
go on,
more of this. And then it just died off. But
and also they need to, again, I said this last week, they need to get more players into the box. Because when they are overlapping, you see people strolling. I think, well, someone make a dynamic run, please.
Yeah, please. But yeah, 9 points from eight. The reason I say it's sacking form is because this puts us on pace for about 51, 52 points. And historically, that has just about kept you in the division.
Yeah.
And that is not going to be acceptable to these owners. I think you might have got away with it last season. You're definitely not going to get away with this season. No matter how much Yap tries to downplay expectations and say, we need to know where we are, yada, yada, yada. I'm sorry, a 51, 52 point pace isn't good enough.
And judging by the start of the season, I think all of us have seen enough to know that this slow-paced football is not going to get us where we want to be.
Especially because teams have done their homework now.
People know how to play against Reading.
Yeah. Anyway, the main attraction of this game came after the full-time whistle. It came during an interview with BBC Radio Berkshire live with Tim Deller. Now, Tim had been talking just before Yap came on air about how he actually thought that the booing might have helped the players, saying, you know, I thought it inspired them. And he sort of gently put this to Yap, and by Tim's own admission on the air afterwards, he said the look Yap Stam gave him was not a particularly pleasant one. This is the key quote when asked about the fans. He says, I don't think it's about the fans making them go forward. I think it's very, very bad they're reacting like this. If you have a season like we had last season, I don't know if they're expecting us to win the league, but I can tell you it's not going to happen. So we need to be clear about that. If you're going to make noise, if you're negative, why do you need to come to the stadium? And whatever the problem, and they can talk to me, I'm willing to come over and talk to them about that, you know, but I don't like it when fans are acting like this. They're only shouting if it's not going well. We can hear them, but if it's going well, we don't hear them. We only hear a small group because, of course, it's not everyone. If it needs to be like that, sorry, but I've been used to other fans who react in a different way to a team who maybe is having a hard time scoring a goal or going forward because the opposition is playing in a certain way as well. What was your initial reaction, Westy, when you heard those comments, either read them or heard them at the time?
Well, I didn't hear them at the time. I didn't have the radio on when I left, but I don't like fans booing their home team. And I think we've said on this show for all the years I've been doing it that Reading fans are particularly quick to get on the team's back when basically we are there to support them, aren't we?
Yeah.
But like I said to you off air, football sells itself now as a game of entertainment. It's not a sport. It's sort of tried to transcend that by being an entertainment, especially the Premier League and now the Championship. So if you're selling it as entertainment, then like me watching a bad film, you've got to expect people to criticise it at the end of it. As simple as that. And I think football uses supporters as it wishes to. It wants you to come in and support your team. It doesn't want you to get too rowdy, because otherwise you get threatened with getting chucked out. And it also, when things are going bad, doesn't want you to say a word about it and get beyond the team. Now, I think the team are there to entertain us. And if they entertain us, a bit like when Bob Varson come on, the crowd got behind him then.
Yeah, that, as mentioned, that a little period in the second half,
got behind him.
Fans was, they were clapping, there was noise.
But if you're going to play such boring football, that it's difficult to watch sometimes. And a lot of people I know ain't bothered about going at the moment, because they're thinking, I don't want to watch that. I want to go there and be entertained. I want to enjoy my day out. Hmm. And it's not been enjoyable. I think Aston Villa game was. So I think Stam is a little bit naive by having a go at the fans. By all means, say, like we said off air as well, if things are going well and you've won a game and the fans haven't got behind you, say, look, we could have done with a little bit more today, you know what I mean, when times are bad. Fine, you don't mind that, because it's true. They do need you to get behind them. That's what we're there for. But mostly the booing came from the decisions he made by putting players on the pitch that most of us thought he shouldn't have done.
And also, what part... I understand this argument, and I agree. We do need to do more. We are getting a little bit lazy as fans. We are a little bit spoiled.
What's happened to the drummer?
He's gone. He's retired.
Oh, he's retired.
Retired at the start of the season, yeah. All right. Club did put an advert out, see if anyone wanted to replace him, but no one has. So I agree. You know, we have to do our part as well. The question I have is, Yap, how is that going to affect anything we saw on Saturday?
It won't.
Are you saying that if we had been rowdy and noisy and stuff, are you saying they would have been a bit more proactive and gone forward? If so, I'm sorry, but you're a professional footballer and you need to be able to do that.
You should be doing it anyhow.
You know, Reading fans historically, go back and watch the season DVD, Yap, of 2005-06 or even 2002-03, any other season. Reading fans, even when the stadium has been half empty, have been able to get behind a team. They've been able to be vocal, that they've got excited. But like you say, Westy, you're lulling people to sleep. And then to make them suddenly perk up... It's just very hard to do.
Yeah, you've got to give them something to cheer. I mean, even some of the biggest crowds. I mean, I've been to places like Villa and that, and Derby, when things aren't going well, they soon let you know about it.
Yeah.
And yes, they do get behind their side. Again, when the team are entertaining them, but when they're losing, you're going to hear about it, and that's football all over. I mean, Yapstown's been lucky enough to play for a lot of big clubs who win big trophies, so he probably hasn't had to deal with that too much.
It's about encouragement. So they do good things, even if they don't come off great. Reading fans were applauding a beat of crosses that weren't finding a man.
Yep.
Now, this wasn't like, you know, we weren't like, yeah, fantastic. It was more like, yeah, come on, we want more of that. Great, do it.
They also applauded Van der Berg for some of his tackling.
For that run we talked about earlier.
A run, yeah. We don't mind people getting it wrong. We just mind people...
Try it.
Yeah, I don't mind if you're trying, as long as you're trying. But when I see players giving a ball away and then throwing their hands up in the air and standing still, I don't like that.
Yeah, well, you would forgive Liam Kelly for giving the ball away once if he had just done three brilliant passes.
Of course.
You know... Look, Steve Sidwell wasn't perfect. Steve Sidwell did the occasional thing wrong.
Yep.
But the amount of things he did right, same with Phil Parkinson. You know, Phil Parkinson sometimes we think was this amazing, magical footballer. He wasn't amazing.
He wasn't a good footballer.
He had that heart.
But he just never gave up. Yeah. And it's a bit like Mackie. I mean, the fans love Mackie wherever he goes. Now, you're telling me Mackie's a great centre-forward? Because he isn't. You're telling me he's a good footballer? He isn't, really. But what
Even
he will
Danny
give
Williams.
You... Yeah, exactly. And Williams. What they will give you is their heart and soul. And that's all you can ask for.
So, yeah. Look, I think... I can understand where Yap's coming from. And look, this man has won European Cups. He's been in coaching setup. He's managed a team now for a year and a half. He's done this, he's done that. And I'm not going to sit here and say, I know football better than Yap Stam. That would be completely stupid of me to try and do so.
Of course, yeah, we're not saying that.
But I am a football fan. And ultimately, your job, Yap, is to encourage me to come and watch my club and to give me something to get excited about. That's why, you know, you're here. You're not doing it at the moment.
It'd be interesting to see... on seasons where obviously we had a good season last year, and you'd have thought that this year the crowds would have gone up a little bit, but they haven't. If anything, I think they've dropped off.
Yeah, well, there was some rumours going around before the kickoff, and we did ask the club for verification of this, and we didn't get anywhere. But there were a few reports saying they'd said you can sit where you want; it's unreserved. The official attendance was just over 15,000, and there were probably about 1,000 Hull fans. That's not good from Reading's point of view.
No, it's a poor... It's for a team that finished third, and again, I still don't know how they did, but for a team that finished third, you'd expect the team to have attracted more fans. But if anything, because of the style of football, I know lots of people that don't go.
Now, look, let's go back and let's try and finish this on a positive, because
definitely.
We are 8 games into the season.
Yeah, yeah.
We are 3 games removed from the end of the transfer window. Or is it... No, it is 3.
Hmm.
Expecting a team to gel 3 games in is ludicrous. It's not. We're not suddenly going to be hitting 4 5s and 6s. What we want to see is gradual progression. And hopefully these couple of points, look, we've got out of jail with a couple of points here. We could easily be sitting here with 0 points for these last two games. Instead, we've got two. Better than nothing. Gives you a little bit of foundation. They go and nick a jammy win at Millwall. They scrape past Norwich, you know, suddenly 6 points. You've got that platform. Nothing is decided yet. Even if we don't make the playoffs this season, they get into a good run of form and you can see that progression, everyone's going to be happy. So give him that time. He's absolutely earned that time. And some people are commenting that in Melbourne that we'll come on to. So look, I'm not sitting here saying Yapstam needs to go. I think it would be absolutely stupid for Reading to sack Yapstam now. A, because you've just let him build this team. And B, who else are you going to get?
Yeah, again, no one's saying that. I'm certainly not saying that. I'm just judging it on that game and the season at the moment. It's not been great.
If it continues like that, but he'll have to go.
But we are scraping points when, let's face it, we've been poor. Mm. So hopefully, like you said, there's plenty more to come from that team. I'm sure there is. I think they will get better and better. They just need to speed the game up a little bit.
Yeah, if we're sat here 3 or 4 months from now having this same argument, then that will be the time when you really are saying, well, look, it's not working.
But even last year, we didn't win many games convincingly, did we?
No.
There wasn't many games I sat there and thought, they haven't had no chance in this game. And all the home games this year, we could have quite easily lost them all.
Hmm.
I mean, we lost one, but we could have lost them all. But the chances that we've let go. So we're scraping results and, okay, it's not great because it's a bit slow, but there's plenty more to come, I think.
Okay, well, look, we've had our say and we're obviously going to delve much more into this, but I want to get to the mailbag. It is big, it is long, and we really do appreciate everyone who's chipped in. So let's get into that. No news bites this week. There's nothing to really talk about anyway. So we'll delve straight in to that mailbag.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Okay, mailbag time. Thanks to everyone who's contributed. It's at the Tarlhurst End on Twitter, thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. And you can also visit us at facebook.com/Tarlhurst End and youtube.com/thetarlhurstend.
A few old friends on here today as well, I see.
Yeah, we are, including one former key co-host of this show. We'll get to him later. Anyway, we start with Ben. He says, hi guys, long-term listener and a Reading fan. On the fans singing/being an active participant issue, I really feel the club haven't helped themselves over the years. While I don't get much time to go to games because I live just outside of Brighton, I've learned there's only one area I can go to when I do make the trip up, the obvious being Y25-26, if I want to sing. Now, I get the club and subsequently stewards' hands are tied by laws around seating somewhat, but how stern they've been in the other sections of the ground on people standing and singing has been absurd. I've sat in the lower west stand, the upper west stand, the Eamon Dolan stand /north stand, and every time within seconds of standing up, trying to sing, the stewards homed in on me and forced me to sit back down, aside from when everyone was celebrating a goal, obviously. This goes without saying is not conducive to a good atmosphere stadium-wide. My main question is, why do they not have the leniency of Y25-26 elsewhere? Now, I understand they've backed themselves into a corner somewhat by making the club family-friendly. These fans tend to want to be seated more, not have their view obstructed, which is great. Everyone should be catered for. But surely the club could try systems where around the ground, they say the lower two thirds are strictly seated only, then allow some leniency in the highest third of the stands or around the stadium, which would help care for everyone and hopefully produce a much better atmosphere wide. That or introduce clearly stated singing sections, for example, just behind the goal in the Eamon Dolan stand, again, helping spread out the noise. Obviously, the hopeful introduction to safe standing could go a long way to bringing some atmosphere back to the Mad Stad. Until that time, I do feel there are things the club could be doing and dialogues with fans that could be had to help the matter. On a side note, regarding Yapstown's comments, I'm a fan of his and feel they are mostly justified, with the one issue being he seems to think we're all demanding winning the league. That's hardly the case. Most fans, I feel, just want to see a bit more effort and intensity to the play from some on the pitch.
I think it's hard to disagree with any of that. We've covered this many, many times for many, many seasons now. And I've said for a long time that the stewarding is sometimes absurd in that ground. And like I said, if you're going to start chucking people out because they're singing and dancing and trying to enjoy themselves, and then all of a sudden you're going to ask everyone to start singing, you have put yourself in a corner. And we've had this discussion. I mean, even when I started the show 9-10 seasons ago now, we had the Biscuit Boys who tried to start.
Yes.
And it was the most... I've never seen a crowd of people hounded as much as they
what
did.
What I will say, is, and I can't disagree with a lot of the problems of the past, but what I will say is having the fortunate position of being able to speak to those at the club on a fairly regular basis, they are very open to ideas now and suggestions and people who want to create that atmosphere. If you can come up with a way that you think is organically going to help things, go to the club and suggest it. Have this dialogue. Email the club in and they are more than happy to talk to you. I noticed there was a subtle thing on the ticketing news they released this week where they were sort of saying they're going to now start splitting up the blocks. And the advice is, if you definitely want to be seated now, we recommend you buy in the lower half of the block. And I think that's a really great common sense thing. Just a little thing that is going to help fans in the future gravitate towards each other.
I think, again, though, it's just the way football is now. It's become more of a spectator sport than as a bring down support. Especially when I was a kid back in the 80s, completely different. Everyone knows who you are, they know where you sit, and you don't get the opportunity to meet up with your mates and all sit together now, and that is part of the problem.
Look, my idea, and it will be, I don't know how easy it is to do, I'm not even going to get into the legislation, but I would just overnight, I would say from next season, Y25 and Y26 are going to be unreserved seating. You will buy a season ticket for that area and you can sit where you like. Now, I can understand that police and stewards and all sorts will probably have problems with that, but if you knew, I can just buy a season ticket for it and I can go and congregate towards where people are singing from. That'll help massively. It's how the South Bank used to work. It's how football has generally worked.
It does, yeah. It would certainly help if that's what people want to happen. But like I said, I just think it's just the way football is now. I think most of these new grounds are pretty soulless.
Yeah. And ultimately, it goes back to the whole thing we talked about earlier. If the team is playing well, if the team is even if they're not winning, if they're playing well and being exciting, the noise comes back.
I mean, some of the great games we've had at Madejski, that Bradford game a couple of seasons ago, the atmosphere was
the Forest where we
electric. Premier League games, especially when we know they need us to get behind them, then I think the atmosphere has been great there. It's just these games that just kill it. There's no away fans in it. The football's killing it. It kills the atmosphere in the ground.
Yeah, so there's some good suggestions anyway, Ben. And as I said, I do tend to agree with a lot of them. But again, what I'd say to anybody out there who's thinking similar things is get in touch with the club. If you've got a group of mates and you've got an idea, like the Biscuit Boys, it's a new era at the club. It's a new regime. Get in touch with them. Get in touch with customer services. They'll put you in touch with the right people. Do it. The club want us as fans to come up with ideas to improve the atmosphere. And if you've got an idea that you think the club can help with, get it over to them.
Yeah.
Anyway, so thanks for that, Ben. Theo, firstly, I never agree with booing your own team, so I agree with Stam about why do people come to boo. However, Yap must take responsibility. Possession football is one thing, but childhood errors. Passes behind players where we're moving forward, seeing a pass and taking another touch for executing. Playing a winger that has a great understanding with his counterpart defender, out of position. Not playing a youth striker that's in good form, bringing him on late on in matches for 20 or 30 minutes, while we have a striker shortage. The time has come for Yap to stand up and accept blame. He had a whole pre-season and 8 league games plus 3 cup matches to drill these pathetic little mistakes out of the team that don't even happen on a Sunday league football on muddy, bumpy, waterlogged pitches, and get that out of the team. That's why they boo, Stam. That's why they are calling for your head now.
I'm not sure they're calling for his head, but yeah, again, there were a lot of stupid errors, and he is right. They had the pitch as an excuse last year, but there is no excuse now. You can't play football on that pitch. You can't play football.
Now, what do you think about the point about playing a youth striker? Do you think that maybe a Sam Smith or a Danny Loader, even if they're not fully ready, should be getting thrown in?
I watched Sam Smith. I didn't like him. I thought he looked weak when I see him play.
It was against Gillingham, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I did think the same.
I thought he looked weak. I thought he was out of the game. I know he scored in the end, but that was when everyone was tired. Do you know what I mean?
I think it was against Millwall he got his goal, didn't
Millwall, he? That's right. Yeah, I see that game. I thought he was poor, to be fair. I don't think he looked anywhere near ready.
Yeah, I think, again, if they are good enough, they're old enough, is that adage.
And I just don't think he's good enough.
Yeah, and I think if there was that gem in the academy, even if there was half a hint, you know, like we saw with Liam Kelly last season, I think Stan would be using him. But look, I can see Theo's argument. They've got nothing to lose. They've got a striker shortage. And maybe Smith learns quickly and gets better.
Maybe, but laughably, they had an international striker sat on the bench who wasn't playing anyway. So
So anyway. Thanks for that one, Theo. Brian Davis, who's been a long-time supporter of the show.
Very long.
Yeah, he has been here for a long old time. He says, turn down a free ticket, went to local non-league instead. Will take a complete change in style to get me back to the Madejski this season.
There you go. Exactly what I was talking about. Many, many people I spoke to have done exactly the same thing. I know lots of people now are going to watch Maidenhead.
Well, it's, you know, if the attendance on Saturday was 15,000 or whatever, and that is including every ticket sold, remember, so there was probably only just close to just under 15 there. That means that from the average a few years ago, 3,000-4,000 people aren't turning up. Which, by my very quick maths, is the best part of, 20% of the crowd has suddenly decided, I'm not coming.
Yeah, for a team that could have been in the Premier League now. Do you know what I mean? That tells you what you need to know, really.
Yeah. Benji, who is Ben?
Benji.
Who's been on this show, Mr. Greenwood, several times. He couldn't make the show this week. He was invited, couldn't make it. He says, sorry I can't join this week, but thought I'd ask a question. Stam often makes a point of mentioning how the opposition sit in and make it difficult to play against them, but then doesn't seem to have a particular response to this tactic, even though we sit against us regularly now. Our best moments in the first half against Hull came from more direct balls played in behind. It seemed this was a deliberate tactic to mix up our play and look promising. We then dropped back into the usual slow build-up play and struggled to create chances once again. Do you think Stam is perhaps too stubborn in his philosophy and that, as teams now are very aware from it, we are too easy to play against? Possession football can be fantastic if you have top quality players capable of making quicker passes and seizing the moment to pounce and play that killer through ball. Perhaps we, and most sides in this division, are just not good enough to play this style without getting found out. Apologies for such a long email. Interested to hear your thoughts. Thanks very much, Ben.
Yeah, I totally agree with that as well. We spoke about possession football, and if you watch top sides play it, because most of them do, let's face it. If you watch Real Madrid play football, they play possession football, but they play it at such a pace that they'll be in their own box and there are four players, and then before you know it, they're down the other end of the pitch, where Reading seem to think that once they get to the halfway line, oh, there's no pass forward, so we'll just go backwards again and then back to the goalkeeper, and it's just dreary. And I think you do need to have players making runs in behind, moving about more. You've got the players to do it, but just don't do it. And I think if you do play a few balls in behind, it stretches the pitch. And that's how we scored, basically. Mm. Once they played that more direct ball, it stretched the pitch out. They couldn't sit in like they were.
One of the most exciting games under Stam so far was Leeds at home.
Yes.
And that was when they were springing out with direct balls, with pacey runs. You know, we had that McCleary run through on goal.
Yeah.
And I think that surprised Gary Monk. I don't think Gary Monk saw that coming.
No, because we played a lot like Leeds do. If you watch Leeds, that's the way they play football. It is much more exciting. They do express themselves a bit more, and they are allowed the freedom to try and take players on. And we're missing that. I mean, when do you see players in midfield, especially, try and take anyone on anymore? It's all very much get the ball, pass it sideways, get in another position, which is great, but you've got to mix it up.
As per Ben's question, is Stam too stubborn?
Yes. I think he is too stubborn. I think he's seen enough now, and we've all seen enough of his style of play to think to ourselves that it very rarely does he try and mix it up. It's only ever happened when we're losing and he's put someone like Mendes up front, and then all of a sudden it's been booted long. I'm not saying boot the ball long, of course not, but you do have to find another way to play against teams, and we don't seem to have that. And that is why we took a few freshens away from home.
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to one of my colleagues at work who's a Man United fan, and I was describing it, and he said, well, it just sounds exactly like us under Louis van Gaal.
Yeah, boring.
Yeah, and I said to him, well, the good thing was, at least under Louis van Gaal, you had players that would get you out of jail with a moment of real quality. And unfortunately, we don't have that star power at the moment. That's what was happening last season. It was a moment of magic from Swift. It was a great turn from Kermigan.
Yeah.
It was a brilliant burst from McCleary. Someone was making something happen, and they're just not getting that little bit of star power down.
No. And again, we've all our midfielders seem to be very similar footballers, apart from Van der Berg. You say, well, he's more of a defensive...
Kelly's a little bit different.
Kelly's what I call, what I would say is a new midfielder, a young midfielder. You can see they've all been taught to do exactly the same thing. Get the ball, play a nice pass, get another position, get the ball back. You know what I mean? It's nice if you've got other players that are making runs, but when no one's making any runs, you're only going to go backwards.
My memories, admittedly, are fairly hazy, given that I was very young at the time. But I remember that Simon Osborne was a midfielder that seemed to be able to do a lot of different things.
Yeah.
You never quite knew what you were going to get from him. Yeah, you would get those, I'll pass it, I'll move to another position. But you'd get the drives, you'd get the runs at the defence and the shots.
Also, he would pick out worldy passes. You know what I mean? He'd pick out splitting defence passes, whereas Kelly rarely does that, to be fair to him, does he? There's not many times I've seen Kelly get the ball and do a defence splitting pass, which it's not easy.
There's just not many times over the past two seasons I can remember a Reading striker or a midfielder running through on goal.
No.
Just doesn't seem to happen anymore. So thanks for that, Ben. Moving on, Robert Stevens. Yap said on BBC Radio Barks, Hull set up and played as he expected. Why then was his game plan so completely ineffective in all areas? So, that's exactly what Ben said. Again, is he just being... too stubborn.
Yeah. Well, Bristol done it. They play exactly the same way. Everyone who comes in now does it. The only team that didn't do it, and we opened them up easier, was Villa, because they had a bit of a disconnect from their midfield and their defence. They left us a lot of room. And that's obviously ultimately what cost them the game. But everyone else is doing exactly the same thing. So I don't see why you're surprised about this.
What about the argument, the counter-argument to that is, it's Stam's not being stubborn. It's he's given his team every chance to learn the system better. But the more they play it, the better they'll get at it.
But there wasn't that many players in that match day starting team that haven't played for him already. There was two, I think. Yeah. Edwards and...
Aluko.
And that's it. The others were the same teams he had last year.
Yeah, except for maybe Minone, but I can't say he had a great impact on the play.
The goalkeeper doesn't make a great deal of difference, to be fair. In fact, he's probably a better footballer now, Absi.
Yeah, true. Pete says, the insipid first half had everyone around me complaining in mutters and the occasional frustrated outburst. My blood was boiling. I've not seen a first half like that from a Reading team in a long time. I'd been looking forward to the game since Wednesday and woke up on Saturday drenched in blue and white enthusiasm. By halftime, all my exuberance had been totally obliterated by the listless, inept display. Something must have been said at halftime because the performance on the pitch was better, but I felt that it was the players angrily working it out for themselves rather than any tactical wizardry from the coach. When Jordan Abiete came on, and I hope he's okay, I understood it. Playing with a back five, you need fresh attacking wingbacks. A few minutes later, the sub of Kelly for Alori to push Joe forward was utterly ridiculous. Kelly scored a few already this season and offers a good set-piece option. Joe is a good stopper. When we needed a goal, and this was yet another example of poor, ineffective subs by Stam. I felt sorry for Alori when the booing started because it's not his fault, but the fans aren't stupid. Stam seems to be watching something different to the fans, shades of Nigel Adkins, and while I accept he wants to play a certain style, which I would enjoy if done well, I can't accept a performance like that. The side were ill-prepared and his subs were as usual ineffective. He threw on the daddy at the end as a sort of protest to the owners, as if saying, this is all I have, but daddy delivered. You've got a striker, Stam, and an expensive squad, bigger than any other Reading manager before. Stam's quick to kick off at the board with a metaphoric boo at his lack of strikers, but doesn't like it when he gets a boo from the fans for a job badly done. For me, Stam should shut up and suck it up. That performance was completely unacceptable, and he should know the fans are angry with him.
Good email. Correct. I also agree with this because we didn't say this. I felt sorry for Alori as well because I wasn't, or I'm sure the fans weren't, upset that he was coming on.
I like Alori.
I think he's a good player. I think he will be a good player. But there was more upset by the fact that we have put a centre-back on the pitch. But yeah, I hope he hasn't took any offence to that, Alori, because I'm sure for 100% of the people that have done it, it wasn't anything directed at him.
Yeah, do you think that was a bit of a metaphorical boo towards the owners from Stam saying, well, look, this is all I've got?
Well, if it was, it backfired in his face because it was the only time we looked like he was going to score when he came on, and I thought he was excellent. So why doesn't he play?
Hmm. This goes back to the key core argument that we had all summer long about why in the blue heck didn't they sign a striker? Didn't they sign any striker? And Theo, another Theo, asked the question. He says, do you think a consistent goal scorer would fix the problem? If so, who would you want us to get? Is it as simple as this? I've asked this question on Podcast Extras and this show. Is it now, 8 games in and 3 cup games, apparent that it's the striker? It's just the striker.
I'm not sure it's just the striker. Again, I could go back to what we said earlier. I mean, Dumbergan was an important part of how they played last year and they definitely missed him. But the thing is, good strikers cost lots of money, you know what I mean? And everyone wants them. And you could see why Reading didn't get them, because I'm sure Reading are not the sort of side is prepared to put ridiculous money on the table.
But surely they should have gone out at some point and gone, we need a plan B that we can realistically get a young, hungry lower league striker, a Premier League youngster on loan, somebody to provide that depth.
But yeah, I'm glad you said that, because there has to be someone out there, doesn't there? There has to be someone sat on a bench somewhere.
Are you telling me there was nobody amongst the bottom two leagues that they could have gone, we're going to give you this opportunity, play in the Championship, we've got a bit of a problem, Jan's out till Christmas, show us what you can do. I refuse to believe there wasn't one player out there they could have got.
There's got to be. Even some of the players have sent, I mean, I don't like Rackles particularly, but they've sent two strikers out.
Yeah, Rackles and Mate.
Yeah, and you're telling me they couldn't have done a better job than McCleary yesterday? Arguably, they probably could have done. I mean, I don't like to say Rackles, I don't think he's a good footballer, but they've sent two out and we've got no one to replace them. So why send two out in the first place?
You have to admit, as much as he rightly took a lot of praise last season, Brian Tafraden, overall, where you sit here now, the recruitment policy hasn't been amazing. There seems to be the scales seem to have tipped to me more in the miss than hit category.
Yeah, we've not brought anyone in that's made a massive difference so far, have we?
Well, let's look at the lineup yesterday. Minone, fairly good so far.
I think that was an adequate replacement.
Yeah, John Abita was already here.
Yeah.
Tyler Blackett is probably not as good as Abita.
No.
You've got Paul McShane was already here. Liam Moore, standout, great signing. Brilliant. Fantastic. Chris Gunter, already here. Joe Vandenberg, okay. All right.
Vandenberg, he's a player that he trusts, and I can see why he trusts him, because apart from that Fulham error, he's pretty steady.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And he can fill in positions.
Is he a world better than the likes of Jem Carrachan or Danny Guthrie, though?
If he went to the Premier League, he'd get hideously exposed every week.
Well, he did. He played at United last year.
That's what would happen.
He
would get hideously exposed.
So, okay. We'll say okay for Joe Vandenberg.
Steady.
Dave Edwards, too early, I think.
But I said about Edwards, didn't I, last time I was on, last week. I said, the problem is, then players that have been at a club for a long, long time find very, very difficult to make an impact at a new club. And I sometimes think that it's just the heart's not in it sometimes. You know, I think they get so used to playing for the team they are that when they go somewhere else, again, I've seen him chuck his hands up in there a couple of times and not chase back. And I don't like that.
Then we've got Liam Kelly, who came through the academy, so he was already here. You can give them a bit of credit because they gave him the chance.
Yeah, they did give him the chance, and a lot wouldn't just because he's so small.
Roy Behrens, meh, all right, okay.
Never stayed here, but also it's a player that was already here. You know what I mean? He bought him last season.
Yeah.
So
Then you've got Sonny Luko, again a bit early, but a club record signing.
We know he can do it in this division if given the right opportunity. Again, will this suit him playing like this? Because Fulham don't.
But a club record signing as well. So far, he's unfortunately treading the line of many other club record signings.
Yeah, and when you get clear opportunities to score goals, you need to score them, especially when you've spent a lot of money on players.
Do you remember Darren Caskey, when Darren Caskey was our club record signing? Yes. And he came in and I think he hit the bar in his first game. And you just think if that had got in, and you just wonder if that goal against Brentford had got in for Luko.
Yeah. And or even a one Saturday, it might have been a whole different thing.
But look, it's stupidly early. I'm not going to write him off.
No.
Then you've got Gareth Cleary, already here.
Out of position, but yeah, already here.
Yeah, and then even on the bench, you know, as mentioned, we've had a beta. We talked about him. You've got Bakuna. Okay, so far again, a bit early. Substitute goalkeeper, perfectly fine. Thiago Alori, you've paid apparently £3 million for him. You don't pick him.
Nope.
I'm trying to think who else was on the bench. Bodvarsson. You don't have the confidence to play him when you don't have any strikers.
In fact, I think you look at most of the bench on Saturday, it was all players that he'd bought.
Yeah.
And the players that have already played, were already earlier most of the time.
So John Swift, who has been a good signing, but he's not had a very good... He had a great first 6 months and then has probably had more bad games than good since.
Yeah, another one is the style of football holding him back.
But young, definitely not writing him off, and I think he's been generally a good signing.
Yeah, yeah.
So overall, though... There's lots more question marks rather than slam dunk hits. I think slam dunk hits, you're looking at Liam Moore, unquestionably a great signing. John Swift, probably a good signing. But beyond that, I'm sorry, but none of the players so far seem to be that fantastic well done.
See, I think if you're buying players for a side, then surely you're buying them to come into the team.
Yeah.
And there's not many of them that have pushed their way into that side, is there?
No.
Even Popper, to be honest, I feel a bit sorry for him, really.
Oh, Popper,
I think whenever he plays, he puts in a shift.
But again, there's another signing that he's made and he doesn't have confidence in it.
Yeah, and he's getting frozen out, really.
So who's, again, is there some sort of disconnect now between the people buying players and the manager?
Maybe.
And if so, well, that needs to be sorted out because, as I said, if you haven't got the confidence in Bodvarsson and Popper and all these other players... What's the point in bringing them to the
What's
club?
The point of having them, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's probably one we'll get into more. But again, desperately trying not to be too negative. But I can only do with what we're given. So we've had from Ian. We haven't heard from Ian. So Ian says, first off, I wasn't there, but I did listen to the match on iFollow. I don't think it's necessarily right to boo your own team, but if it ever is... Based on the commentary from that game, it was Saturday. It's all well and good saying we are there to support the team, but let's say that is our job. It's his job to pick a team most likely to get a result. He knows the players better than us. I get that. But to constantly play without a striker is just aggravating. I don't blame him for not bringing in a new striker. I do blame him for not starting one. Stam has had a go at fans before. It's a real plus that he's defending his players. They need someone to have their backs, and I commend him for that. But don't lash out at the fans that pay good money to be entertained, which they're not. I don't think it's right to boo the team, but I also don't think it's right to slate the fans in this way. He's isolated himself now, and I think he's losing the fan base by doing things like this. If results don't improve soon, he may have just lost a reason for the club to keep him. The baby's woken up now, so I better go. Bottom line is booing doesn't help in the long run, but if he doesn't change or learn, he can't expect the boo boys to change. Really good email, Ian.
Yes, really good email. And again...
And I hope the baby did get back to sleep.
I think we're getting a bit carried away with the amount of people that booed on a Saturday. I mean, it was audible when
20% of the crowd
he brought
maybe
an Orion. But other than that, I don't think it was too bad.
Bit cheering for Gunter when he went off.
But yeah, again, I thought that was a bit harsh. But when the game finished, it was more met with abject silence.
I almost hadn't realised that the game had finished because it was so quiet.
Yeah, it just went quiet. And I think that is the best protest of all.
Got one from Adam Jones. He says, we're still very static at times when the centre-backs have the ball. Do you think this is causing the most frustration amongst the fans?
Yes, we're very static. I've been saying it for season and a half. It's too slow.
The problem is the centre-backs get the ball. They invariably push up towards the halfway line and then they've got no option because you've got 10 men behind the ball, no space, there's little movement going on in front of them.
Yeah.
So Paul McShane's only choice is, I'll play it to Liam Moore or I'll play it to Gunter.
Or goes back to the goalkeeper and start again. Yeah, you can understand why they do that. The thing is, if they've got no pass on, do you want them to just aimlessly boot it long?
No, not really. Especially not if you haven't got a striker on.
But yeah, exactly. But if you've got Bob Arson on, you can hit him, can't you? He's hittable. So it's different then. But yeah, I don't blame the centre-backs in particular. I just think that the midfield need to be making more options for him and making more dynamic runs.
It does make the game more obviously boring, though, when you're just seeing Paul McShane looking up, looking for a pass for about 10, 15 seconds.
Pitiful.
Yeah, and I'm not having a go at Paul McShane. As I said, the options aren't really on for him. There's no one saying, give me the ball.
Yeah.
And then turn in.
Trying to take the game by the scruff of the neck. That's not happening.
Yeah. Right. This one comes from Joe. He says, hi, guys. Great job on the podcast. Thank you very much, Joe. I've just read a statement from Yap on the Chronicle regarding his criticism of the fans at yesterday's game. I was there, and with the questionable team selection and the apparent lack of enthusiasm from some of the players, how can the average fan not be frustrated? I'd hope that Daddy's introduction to the game, which changed it straight away, will make Yap think about starting McCleary out of position again. He looks better when he was played at right back. It's amazing what happens when a team like Hull get a striker in the transfer window. They score goals. Yeah, I can't disagree with that.
Yeah, it's gone down the same line as pretty much everyone else.
I would definitely say play McCleary in position. I think he's struggling enough as it is with...
Yeah, his form's
patchy
anyway.
He's either not fit or he's not got confidence, but... Just play him where he knows and let him get that understanding with Gunter. And just, if you're going to play him there.
I mean, McCleary's 30 now. You can't teach an old dog new tricks, can you? We know exactly where you get through him. So just play him where he's going to be comfortable playing.
I thought it was sad how ineffective he was playing through the middle.
It's not his game. He needs to get the ball at his feet and run at players and try and take him on for pace, not sandwich back to goal and try and do something with it then.
And I'm not slating McCleary. It's the same if you put me. I would try really hard if he put me up front, but I'm not going to do a good job. Although, you know, for $30,000 a week, I'm quite happy to try.
I would try really hard.
I would try really hard. Matt, let's hope this poor start makes Stan realise that last season was slightly fortunate and that his style needs to evolve quickly. A higher tempo and more urgency have to be instilled. Again, we've been harping on about tempo and urgency. And then to a man who's appeared on many, many Reading podcasts in the past before moving to Pastures New.
My best man, actually, was.
No, there we go. Paul Williams. For those of you who used to listen to the old Rules Post or Reading Football Fancast, I can't really do a Paul accent, so I won't try. Do you want to try and read this out in a Paul voice?
No, there's no point. No? I can't do it either.
Okay. He said, so this is the moment. In my view, there's been a group of Reading fans who have never taken to Stam, possibly because McDermott lost his job for him. There has often felt like an undercurrent where these fans have only stayed relatively quiet because results were good. Now, the first bad spell under Stam and him answering a question about booing and knives are coming out. Sadly, predictable. Does something need to be tweaked to make the team better? Yes. Are we far off? No. Could Stam have answered the question more diplomatically? Yes. Were his comments wrong? No. Would he have said something without the question? Most probably not. A decent number of Reading fans have always been quick with the boos and often slow with the praise. It's not like we make the Mad Stad a cauldron of noise before each game, is it? Even when things are going well. Bit of a crossroads now. Fans can either step up and make more supportive noise, nothing to stop people chanting, even during a slow build-up. Unfortunately, likelihood is the opposite will happen and the first mistake will be met with groans. The team player confidence system and this confidence is eroding. The fans can help this. Question is, do we want to be supporters or customers? Some of the complaints here seem to suggest the latter, yet we complain when we as fans are treated as such. Big week ahead now. Good email, Paul.
Yeah, again, it's going on the same lines as we've already said. You should support your team, you shouldn't boo them. But on this occasion, I think it was more the decisions that were being booed, not the team itself.
Yeah, and it just needs a spark. Not asking for a lot. if there has been lots of sparks and then suddenly the game goes quiet for 5 minutes, the fans might well make a noise to try and encourage those sparks to come back. It's like a fire, isn't it?
Yeah.
You need that spark to start the fire, and maybe the flames die down a bit, and that's when you give it a blow.
And again, Paul's been going to a lot of football matches like I did, especially back in the day, and Reading fans have always been quick to criticise the team rather than get behind them.
What do you make about Paul's comment, though, that it's a confidence system?
It is a confidence system, because if you're being asked to keep the ball, especially as a centre-back, you've got to have the confidence to be able to put your foot on the ball and look up and then maybe go back to the goalkeeper. But what happens is, if the fans start getting on your back, it makes it much easier for you to think, do you know what? I just want to get rid of this. So they do need your support if they're going to play that way, but they just need to do it a bit quicker. Simple as that.
Yeah. Well, as I said, give us that spark. Not asking for the world.
No.
We're just asking for a little bit and it will come. And that is up to an individual player, especially the more experienced players in the squad, need to step up. A Roy Behrens or someone like that needs to go, I need to do something. And Joey Vandenberg did that.
Yeah, he did, exactly. But he's a more, this is another thing, Vandenberg's a more experienced footballer,
yes,
and he probably cares less what the fans... Do you remember Mills when he flipped the fans
back? Yeah.
Because he booted out a play about 6 times on the trot. And that's what happens, because all that happens then is they want it. It's like a hot potato. You think, I don't want it because the fans are getting on our back. You know what I mean? And it does, it causes its own problems because they don't want the ball. And like you said earlier, you want a midfielder to say, give me the ball and take responsibility for that. But especially with young players like Kelly and that, if it starts turning the other way, they will start going into their shell, yeah, and you won't...
My advice, again, to those players is try something and then see what the reaction is. And if you get booed, then I will have a problem with our fans.
If you run 50 yards and make a tackle you don't make, they'll clap you for running 50 yards.
Yes, 100%.
If you throw your hands up in the air and then you run up the other side of the pitch while the other team are attacking, they'll notice that.
And Yap Stam should know that better than any. For the clubs he's played at, the United fans, the AC Milan fans, I'm sure they are the same.
Yep, of course. They all just want to see you give everything.
And look, I'm sorry, Yap. I'm sorry we're not Man United fans. I'm sorry we're not AC Milan fans. But you know what? I'm sure it was a bit easier for United fans to stay passionate when it was only a week between winning a game 5-0 and winning a trophy.
Yeah, I mean, a bad season's not making the Champions League.
Yeah.
And you get sacked for that. So
yeah, I'm sorry. We've been raised in slight,
and we live here as well. Yeah, you know, I mean, this is our club.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, hopefully we'll learn. Anyway, thank you very much. I appreciate that was a very, very long mailbag with lots of long emails written in. Ordinarily, I would tend to say, if you are going to send us a mail, try and keep it short. I mean, the website is a perfect. We have a comment section. Anybody can register for the website, sign up, and you can make comments. Or you can write a whole piece yourself. We had one from Jamie Butler. You can go read it now up on thetylersend.com. That's getting lots of reaction, some agreeing, some disagreeing. Leave your comments there. We absolutely want them on the podcast. I'm not saying don't send them in to us, but if you're thinking this is going to take about 3-4 minutes to read out, either condense it down or leave it as a bigger comment.
It's a bit like the team. We want you to make it quicker. Not drag it out so much.
Yeah. But look, I mean, all of the points made, there have been some great points. So thank you very much. At the Tile Last End on Twitter, thetilelastend@gmail.com and facebook.com/tilelastend. Anyway, time to put that behind us. We've got any other business to deal with, and we'll look ahead to two big championship games.
The Tilehurst End Podcast. Any other business?
Right, Westy Weaver, we've been going on for nearly an hour, so let's make this quick. Millwall away, then Norwich at home. First of all, what is the minimum Reading need from these two games, points-wise?
Four. Yep, I'd like to see a win at Millwall. You'd think, judging by... I know it wasn't a full-strength side, but judging by what I see of them at home, I think Reading are more than capable of going there and beating them. But they're pretty good at home, and I see them give Leeds a right lashing the other week.
Yeah, and they beat Norwich as well.
Yeah, I don't think they'd be an easy prospect, let's put it that way. But your slow, boring tempo away from home sometimes works in your favour, because their fans get on their back when they haven't had a ball for a long time. Do you know what I mean? So again, it might work a lot better away from home this season.
Again, the one thing Reading can't seem to do, they can't fall behind. I don't see them turning around a goal to win.
You don't see them scoring two goals, do you? Really? So unless we score first, I think we'll be looking for at least a minimum draw.
Is that the more winnable game of the two?
Yes, I think so.
Really?
Yeah, I think Norwich, I think they're a funny sort of side. They have been, especially last year. I mean, they hammered us. And they've still got some good players. I think they're starting to get it right now, Norwich, and I think they'll be difficult to beat.
Yeah, a lot of new names that Norwich side. I mean, I wrote down their last lineup. There's a lot of names, you know, you don't recognise. They've really had a good clear out under Mr. Farker, their manager. but they've still got a smattering of experience with the likes of Houlihan and Murphy and Cameron Jerome and players like that. So
I just think
tough.
They look stronger this year than they did last, and I think we struggled to beat them.
They had a really poor start, but they're unbeaten in the last five in all competitions. But like Reading, they struggled to score goals. They've only got 8 this season in their 10 games. So look, they're 13th in the table with 12 points. Millwall are 16th in the table with 10 points. So they're teams that have had roughly the same sort of starts as Reading, and I think you're right. I think you've got to look for 4 points. I think 3 wouldn't be an absolute disaster, but I think 4 really.
It'd be nice to get 4, wouldn't it, Adam, too?
Yeah. Right, prediction league-wise, the two big winners last week were Dave Harris and Tom Crocker, both who predicted 1-1 draws. The rest of us all failed miserably. So, Westy, I think you are still at the top, though, because those two are now holding up to 4 points. So you're still at the top on 6. So how do you see these two games going?
Do you know what, I'm going to go for 2-0-0s.
Two nil nil. I'm going to say, I'm going to just go negative just because I need some points in the prediction league. 1-0 Millwall, and I think we're going to see a 1-1 against Norwich.
See, this is why I never win the prediction league, because really what I was thinking of is they're going to get beat at Millwall, but I couldn't bring myself to do it.
Well, you know. You've been bold anyway. So look, Westy, thanks very much for joining us. And again, thank you to all of the people that have contributed to the show. Look, I apologise if you sat here thinking, oh God, these guys have just moaned on for an hour. Do everybody a favour, or everyone who you thinks like you, send us that email.
That's what we want.
Give that counterpoint. I will read it out. I guarantee you I am not burying any positive emails.
I tell you, if it's out there and it's not come from Yapstam, then I'll be shocked.
Yes.
That counterargument.
So look, please get involved. The Tireless Den website and podcast is a by fans, for fans. Do that. Westy, thanks very much for joining us. I will be back with Tom Crocker, hopefully on Friday, to preview the Norwich game and have some reaction to that Millwall match. And please do head over to thetirelessden.com. Lots of great content going on. And of course, thank you to everyone who contributes at patreon.com/thetirelessden. In the meantime, let's hope we're sat here a week right now with a bit of humble pie in front of us and worshipping Yap after 2-3-0 wins.
I tell you, I'd be happy to tuck in as well, wouldn't you?
125%. And on that note, come on, you arse. It's funny how it